Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Scott Wilkinson. Episode 133 for September 1st, 2010. Linux MCE. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to floss.hover.com. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show of free, libre, open source software brought to you weekly. We bring you the biggest, the best, the brightest, the most interesting, the most diverse, the craziest sometimes, and the most useful every once in a while. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com. Been doing this show for quite a while now, shepherding this show, sort of rising it from the ashes, the phoenix as it might be from many, many years ago. And I am loving this show, doing it a lot. I'm really appreciating that we're keeping it on a regular weekly schedule. I hope to do that for quite some time in the future. And I think I've talked on about myself way too much now, because I do want to take this moment to introduce a very, very special co-host this week. It's not the usual band of five that I've been bringing on or rotating over the last few months. I actually went out, because of today's topic, which we'll get to in a moment, I had to reach out to a very special, knowledgeable person. It's none other than Mr. Scott Wilkinson. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Randall, how's it going?
I'm doing well, doing well. Thank you for coming on this very special show. And why might I have invited you for this show? What's your specialty?
Well, my specialty is home theater and home media. I am the editor of ultimateavmag.com and the online editor of hometheatermag.com. And I cover the world of home theater, big screen TVs, surround sound, Blu-ray, that sort of thing. And media center PCs as well, as I'm getting more and more into on my own podcast, Home Theater Geeks, right here on the TWiT Network.
Very good. Well, now that is exactly why I invited you, because today's guest, very, very cool. Today's guest is Thomas, I get his name here right, Thomas Cherry Holmes. Thomas has been with the Linux MCE project since September 2007. And Linux MCE is not just a home theater system, although it's definitely a big component of it. It also apparently manages things like your alarm system, your home telephony, if you're using VoIP and stuff, if you've got like lights that you want to control with remote devices and things. It really covers like just about everything that you'd want to cover in one place. It's a really integrated design. It's totally open source. You know, I watched the video for this, and I was just stunned by it. It was just so many different things that we do and how easy it was to set up for even, you know, idiots like me or something. So very, very cool. I'm really looking forward to our guest. Before I get that, though, I do have an apology I want to make. So last week I mentioned that I was a reader now, a narrator, for this podcast called StarshipSofa.com. And when I was trying to remember the guy's name, and I've listened to enough of these episodes, you think I'd already know the guy's name, but no, I said Doug Smith. I'm so sorry. Tony C. Smith. Tony Smith, in fact, good friend of mine now. Please go over and check that out, StarshipSofa.com. I'm now narrating 20-minute, 50-minute pieces of science fiction, short science fiction stories. I'm having a great time doing that. I want to apologize. And also, let's see, so I've already introduced the guest. I'm checking my little list here to make sure everything is okay. But before we actually bring on the guest, I have a very important announcement to make. So let me find my folder here. Hello, bring this up. There we go. So before we get to our guest, I actually want to talk about a good person, a good friend of ours, good friend of the show anyway, because this episode is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration management that's simple. You can get 10% off your new domain simply by going to floss.hover.com. Go right there. It'll teach you exactly what you have to do to get money off your domain. Very cool. So this episode, it's all about making domain registration and service very simple. So over the years, domain registration sites have become more and more complicated. You go to a site to register a domain, and it seems like it takes 50 clicks just to buy one, and there's all these little dancing ads and stuff around the sites, and I really kind of hate that. So these sites barrages with pages and pages of offers when really all you want to do is buy a domain. So I'm beginning to use Hover.com for my own registrations after I heard Leo Laporte talk about it. So they're not trying to sell you a ton of services. They're just really focused on making it easy to register and manage domains, manage email, It was previously called Domain Direct. So if you've been around the net for long, and I remember that name from a long time ago, they've been around for a long time. Sold domains since 1997. They know what they're doing. They have complete help resource area. Their website's packed with how-tos, packed with videos. And you can go there to learn about managing, forwarding, transferring domains and email. And I'm going to be transferring some of my domains over to Hover.com real soon now. And they have a new no-hold policy for customer service calls, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. When you call, guaranteed, you'll get a live person. They won't put you on hold. So just go to floss.hover.com and get your registrations taken care of today. And when you have the domain to register, use the offer code in the little box, floss, for this particular show, and you'll get 10% off. So visit them today. Very glad that they're sponsoring the show. I love having good sponsors, especially ones that I'm using. Very nice stuff. So do you have any last words, Scott, before we bring on the guest?
I'd say let's talk to Thomas.
Absolutely. So I believe we have Thomas on the line. Thomas, are you here with us?
I'm here with you guys. Hello.
Very good. Morning. Very good. Well, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Now, I actually gave a bit of an introduction to the Linux MCE project at the beginning of the show, and I probably did it horrible justice because this isn't something that I've used yet. I've watched the video on it, but I haven't actually used it yet. So could you give us sort of the first 30-second intro to what this is all about?
Linux MCE is quite literally, it stands for Linux Media Center Edition, but it's actually a lot more. It's a complete smart home platform, literally combining lighting control, media control, climate control, security, and telecom for the entire home in a single package that you can install on a series of machines to control every single piece of technology in your home.
Well, that sounds like a lot of stuff, and it's all open source, right?
It's all open source.
Very cool.
In fact, we use a lot of open source projects to take and combine everything together.
And what would some of those be?
We use, for example, Myth TV for television. We use Zenny for media playback, MPlayer as well for media playback, depending on the files being played. We use Asterisk for the telecom system and various other little bits and pieces. We build everything on top of the Kubuntu Linux distribution currently, although in reality there's nothing really stopping this from being built on top of other distributions as long as you port the, as long as an interested developer ports the plumbing to the appropriate Linux distribution.
Cool. Now let's back up a minute. So who would I be that I would use this? I'm like a, someone probably that has a lot of like a home stereo system that's even dating myself there, but like a home entertainment system of some kind and maybe a media PC and stuff. And does this sort of bring all that together?
This literally brings everything together into one cohesive package, and it allows you for it allows a lot of interesting things to happen. For example, from an audio video perspective, let's take the example of you have a home stereo system to which you also have your TV connected. You have different Blu-ray players, DVD players, etc., all connected together. Well, chances are you either have one of two setups. You either have let's take the coffee table. There are probably 12 different remotes on your coffee table, or you have a universal remote which you've spent months and months and months programming with custom macros so that you can hit a button to turn all those 15 things on. From that perspective, Linux MCE can take and control all of those devices, and it knows how all of those devices are connected and how they're all set up. So when you press watch TV, it knows it needs to turn on the TV. If you have an amplifier hooked up, it knows it needs to turn on and send the appropriate input commands to the amplifier, etc. So all those 15 remotes that you have sitting on your coffee table are completely there. You can throw them in the junk drawer. You don't need them anymore. And it does a lot more from that. It does a lot more from that perspective as well. Up until recently, it's been very difficult. For example, for high-definition video transmissions to be able to be digitized under Linux as well. What we were able to do with Linux MCE is since we can control inputs and whatnot, you can select that you want to watch TV, and depending on how you have it configured, you could have the TV switch over to your high-definition inputs while still having whichever remote you want to choose to use the system, having control and press everything, having everything go to the appropriate inputs. This is especially poignant when you've got an amplifier set up, for example. When you press the volume button, well, where does that volume command go? Well, if you pick up, you have to remember, oh, crap, I have to pick up the receiver remote if I want to turn up the speakers. I have to pick up the TV remote if I want to change the channel. This brings everything into one place because, again, it knows how everything's configured and how everything is set up. I don't want to take and ramble on too much because that's how everything's connected in from the audio video perspective. That's not even counting media storage. That's not even counting lots of other integrated features. Like, for example, whenever somebody calls me on the telephone, it pauses what I'm watching on the TV to turns down the volume, mutes everything, so that I can reach over to my nearest touch panel and answer the phone. And when I'm talking on the phone, I'm literally talking to the TV, so to speak. And when I'm done, I hang up and the TV starts up again. It's just an example of how integrated everything is together.
Hey, Thomas, Scott Wilkinson here. I'm curious how about a number of things you just were talking about. One is... How do the control signals get transmitted to the Blu-ray player and the TV and the AVR and so on? Are you using IR blasters, that sort of thing?
You can. Well, there's a whole bunch of different ways you can do that. IR infrared blasters, of course, are very common. And what we do for that, we support a number of different infrared blasters that you can choose from. I won't go into a list of them here. You can find all of that information on the website. But if your devices also can talk over RST32, we can support that as well. Basically, it's got a protocol and we can send stuff to it and we can receive stuff back. Mm-hmm. We can support it. We make what are called device templates, which specify what the device can do, what it can't do, and how to talk to it. Mm-hmm. And then from that perspective, the user goes into the setup wizard and says, well, I have a Blu-ray player connected to this input. I have the TV connected to this input. I have the PC connected to this input. And the system will figure out what commands and stuff it needs to send to the appropriate devices.
Ah, so it does that. It sets that up automatically.
Yes. That's all taken care of either in the setup wizard or you can do it in the website admin panel if you want to do it by hand. Either way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That reminds me a bit of the Logitech Harmony remote, which is programmed. It's a universal remote. It's programmed by specifying what devices you have and what inputs they're connected to. And which device controls the volume and which device controls changing the channel and so on. And then it automatically downloads all the codes that it needs to do all those things and establishes all the macros or the strings of commands that that do all those things. Like, as you said, when you say, I want to watch TV, it turns on the TV, it turns on the surround sound system, sets the right inputs, lets you control the volume with the volume button and the channel with the channel button, does all that automatically. It sounds like this is somewhat similar.
It is very similar, and in fact, and we actually go as far as being able to, whenever a user creates a device template for a particular device, and I will go into more detail later as to what a device template is. The concept of a device in Linux MCE is very generalized and can mean just about anything that we can talk to. But once a user creates a template for a given device, they can upload it to our database, and it will be available to everyone else.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier... some TV software. I must admit, I'm not that familiar with the Linux environment. So could you say a little bit more about that?
We have two choices. Of course, we have two choices for what you can use for TV software. In essence, Linux MCE is basically, at its core, it's a messaging framework. So we can talk to a whole bunch of different pieces of software. And for the TV, we have Myth TV and VDR. So both of them are supported, and we have device drivers to take and control those. And from that, what we do with that is we provide a way to control those programs from any of our supported control surfaces, control devices, infrared remote controls, whatever. And Of course, from that perspective, Myth TV provides everything that you would need for that you would expect out of a TiVo or a cable box DVR. Of course, you can record, pause live TV, change channels, schedule upcoming programming, and et cetera, et cetera. Myth TV is flexible in this regard because of.
Sorry, pardon me for interrupting. Myth TV is some software, open source software, I assume, that.
That lets you do
all these things. What sort of hardware does it need, like in terms of a TV tuner card or that sort of thing? Will it work with anything?
It will work. Well, we have, if you know how to configure Myth TV, you can make it work with anything that Myth TV supports. What we try to do is we try to make device templates for common TV tuners that are out, that you can buy, so that when you put it inside the system, Linux MCE has an extensive plug and play system. So when you do things like add a TV tuner, like for example, I use a series of HD home runs. And I have an HD PVR, which I have connected to my a Hophog HD PVR, which I have connected to my Comcast cable box. Mm-hmm. And when it finds these devices connected somewhere in the house, it does not matter where. You can have them either connected to the central computer, which we call the core, or you can have them connected to any. PC that you have connected to a TV, which we call those media directors, and they're diskless, by the way. So once we find those, it says, hey, we found a new TV tuner. Would you like to set it up? And it will ask you, okay, well, do you have a schedulesdirect.org account? Which, for those who don't know, schedulesdirect.org is a wonderful service that you can pay for like $20 a year to get TV listings for your favorite computer PVR software. Lots of stuff supported there. Mm-hmm. And once you have all of that set up, then you it goes and configures Myth TV automatically for you, sets everything up correctly, downloads the TV guide, and when it's set as ready, you can tap TV and go watch TV.
Great. What about media sharing throughout the network? I assume that it will do that as well.
Media, that is, wow. Okay, this is a big one. of course, we do have, you know, this, yeah, this is unbelievable. Well, from our perspective, we have a storage layer, which we call Pluto Storage Devices. And I do have to make an aside here. Linux MCE is based on a former piece of software called Pluto Home. And they did a lot of the initial software development. This project would not be anywhere near what it is today without those guys. They did a fantastic job setting the groundwork so that we could continue. And there's a part of the system called Pluto Storage Devices. And its whole purpose in life is to make sure that any piece, any hard drive, any disk, any optical drive that the system knows about connected to any computer inside the house that it can control, it will replicate anywhere else. This means essentially that you can, of course, take, let's have a simple example of ripping a DVD that you have in your collection that you've bought. I must emphasize that.
yes, we must emphasize so that.
You put the DVD in.
Yes.
you put the DVD in, you press copy disk, it asks you, but one of the first things that it asks you is it asks you where you want to put it. Now, storage, of course, you can put that in the main computer, and a lot of people do, in the core itself, or you can put it on one of the media directors, or you can put it on network-attached storage anywhere inside the house. If you plug in, for example, a piece of network-attached storage somewhere inside the house, Linux MCE will say, hey, I found a network-attached storage device. Would you like me to appropriate it? If you say yes, it will say, okay, do you want me to put this in the pool to store things automatically? We use this, for example, to record TV shows or to pick the next largest disc to store a DVD, etc., onto. And it will take and allow you to take and select those things when you're copying a DVD, when you're storing a program or whatnot. But the important thing is that it presents all of these disparate discs, all these disparate pieces, as one big media library. When you go to look up a video, when you go to look up a piece piece of audio to listen to. It all shows up in one list, no matter what disc it's stored on, where inside the house. Mm-hmm. And this is from the other side. You see this as on other computers as a Windows share, as one big Windows share, which has shares to all the other disks that it knows about. So mm-hmm. it provides a very easy way to get access to all your shared media inside the house. We do also provide MediaTomb as a UPnP server as well, and a UPnP client in the form of a DJ mount. Now, it's important to note that all these things are configured out of the box. They're just services that are provided. The user doesn't need to know about them or have to configure them explicitly. They come that way out of the box.
Now, is Linux MCE DLNP? Sorry, go ahead.
DLNA.
DLNA, sorry.
DLNA
is it DLNA as well?
We would love it to be. Now, here's the important thing to note for all you developers that are listening. This system is a messaging bus. So there's nothing stopping anyone from writing a driver to take and communicate with some other messaging bus, be it UPnP, sure. be it DLNA. It does not matter. We can take and appropriate and support it. And we would love someone to be able to take and come onto the project to do that.
Sure. How does it differ from a Windows MCE?
In a lot of ways. Windows MCE, for example, has no home automation features whatsoever, unless you go out and probably buy a module to do that. That's a lot of things. We have so many things that are built in and configured out of the box that you would otherwise have to take and get plug-in pieces to do on Windows MCE. The audio-video switching, the media sharing, not to mention the fact that Windows MCE does not have Follow Me at all.
Oh, why don't you tell us a little bit about Follow Me?
Well,
how much time have we got, right?
The concept of Linux MCE's got the concept of presence detection, meaning if you have some way to tell Linux MCE where you are inside the house, Linux MCE can follow you inside the house. One example of this that we've done in the past is use a cell phone. If you have a cell phone with Bluetooth enabled and it's supported, it will take and download an orbiter to the phone. I'm sorry, we do not have iPhone and Android versions yet. We're looking for people to take and port the orbiters over to be able to support those features. But say I keep my phone in my pocket and I move from one room to the next. If I have media follow me turned on and I'm watching TV in the living room and go into the bedroom, it'll take and turn off the TV in the living room, turn off the stereo, etc. And when I arrive in the bedroom, it will turn on the TV and turn on the stereo, etc. in the bedroom automatically back to where I was watching. I don't think you can do that with Windows MCE, can you?
I honestly don't know. I'd have to look that up. Now, that brings up my next question, though, which is, how does it follow you? By what technological means does it know where the phone is?
From a messaging perspective, all we're doing is we're saying that presence is lost in one room and it's found in another. From the point of view of the phone, what we're doing is we're opening up a Bluetooth connection to the nearest Media Director PC. Each Media Director PC would have a Bluetooth dongle, and it would open up a connection to the phone. And based on the nearest connection that it has access to, it'll say, oh, you're in this room now because this signal's stronger, or, oh, you're in this room because the signal is stronger. Now, keep in mind that anything could generate these events. You could use RFID tags, one-wire iButton switches. With Fire, there was a company that sold Linux MCE-compatible hardware called Fire. They had a special version of the Gyration Media Center remote that had a Follow Me button on it, so you could walk from one room to another and click Follow Me, and it would work that way, too. So it can be expanded out to a lot of different devices. I mean, Wiimotes, for example, have MAC addresses, so you could do the same thing with a Wiimote. If anybody wants to take that on.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's certainly part of the whole deal here is, with anything Linux, really, you have a wide community of developers that anyone can join who has, you know, the programming chops, I guess, to develop these various modules and things, and they just get bolted on to the main piece of code, and then you've got this new functionality, right? I mean, that's part of the beauty of Linux as opposed to Windows.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and it's even more so with our system here because we have a tremendous architecture in place to be able to add on new functionality. Pluto originally designed this so that vendors could come in and write their own device drivers and stuff very quickly. As such, we have once you design a device template, you have two options. If you need more than simple, IR control. You have two other options. You have the ability to write, if it's a simple device, like a simple RS-232 device, you can write code in Ruby to control the device, and it stores that embedded in the database. If you need more complex control, let's say, for example, you're adding in a new media player or you're adding in totally new chunks of functionality that would require a lot of code, we have tools that generate C++ code skeletons that you can take and fill in the blanks, so to speak. In addition, once that's all set up, then we have...
I was just going to say, you've got a lot of interfaces for then all the things that you've got at this lowest level. I mean, I don't have to, as somebody who just wants to, say, sequence my lights, you know, in a certain pattern, have to write code that's at the lowest level. I can kind of talk at a higher API, maybe?
Yes, you can. And that's one of the nice things. There's lots of different ways that you can. There's lots of different ways that you can do that. The DCE. We have a our particular messaging bus standard is called DCE, and it stands for Data Commands and Events. And it's a simple kind of text-based protocol that anything can talk, and you can send any DCE device that's registered in the system can send messages to any other DCE device, as well as intercept events. And you can use that functionality from just about anywhere to do all sorts of neat things.
This reminds me a little bit of my friend Larry Wall. It reminds me a little bit of my friend Larry Wall, who, of course, the creator of Perl. One of the things I remember being most amused about is that early on, as he was rolling out Perl 4 back in the early days, but it must have been like 15 years ago, he stumbled across this thing called
X10. Yeah, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
Stumbled across this thing called X10, which are these interfaces that you could talk to from the machines, and he started rewiring his house so that, like, you press the light switch up front, it doesn't actually turn the light on. It actually sends a command into the system, and then it comes back, and it's all, of course, running Linux or whatever it was at the time. Actually, probably something a little more closed source back then. But I remember the most fun thing that he did was that when people would call on his phone, it would read the caller ID and actually announce using different tones over his speaker system, like who it was. It would actually ring different rings. Like I had my own particular ring when I called in, and I thought that was pretty cool. Is this something that I could set up with Linux MCE?
Absolutely. You can basically what we have the ability in that respect to create events. You can either respond to events, like let's say we wanted to create an event whenever the phone rings, we could read the caller ID, and based on that you could play a sound file or do all sorts of things like that. It's literally a step-by-step wizard-like process. Now, of course, here we have a lot of room for improvement because right now the user interface is not exactly where we would like it to be, but we would love some web developers to come in to take and refine the interface to make it a bit easier. But yes, all these things are possible. You can you can intercept any event within the system, be it a doorbell ring or a phone call happening or a TV program stopped recording, etc., and do all of these various things, send messages to other devices to do different things. As a simple example, we do provide Festival for speech synthesis, and Festival is an open source speech software program written by the good guys at CSTR, Alan Black and those guys. Very good voices and whatnot. We provide a nice set of sample voices for that and a device that you can send to do things like call announcements and anything that you want to, and all you have to do to talk to it is just send it a message, and it will play on whatever media device that you tell it to go out to. And that's the other thing, too. Since we have... Yeah, sorry. Yes?
And I know we've been focusing mostly on the media play aspect, and I brought in just a little bit of maybe about the telephony aspects of it. What other areas, so you mentioned initially like alarm systems and telephony and home media, am I leaving anything out?
Yeah, it's of course you've got access. Of course you have access to lighting as well, and lighting is a very important part for some people who really want the home automation stuff. You mentioned X10 earlier, and X10 is one of the bus systems that we support. For those that don't know, X10 is the oldest and most established home automation system out there. It's been around since the mid 70s, and it's established itself pretty well. The parts are cheap enough, and you can get them anywhere. In addition, we also support the up-and-coming Z-Wave standard, which is wonderful. It's high speed, it's wireless, it's a bit more reliable, in my opinion, than X10. We also support heavy-duty automation systems such as KNX as well. And actually, one of the demo houses that we're working on right now, there's a demo house in Germany being built our release manager actually owns it, and he's going to be wiring his entire house with KNX. And KNX is a very, very heavy-duty lighting and bus control system.
What about
Z-Wave and all of that? Also,
pardon me for interrupting. I know you've got a pretty bad lag there, so right. Excuse me. What about other automation systems like Crestron, AMX, Control 4?
At Crestron, AMX, Control 4, they don't like us very much right now because we make them look bad. consider a Crestron. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Let's take the example of a Crestron system here. I recently was in a house with a Crestron system where the guy had spent close to $600,000 on a Crestron system that all it did was deal with the lights, and it dealt with video switching all throughout the house. There is no telephony, there is no security system integration, and for media, he had to shell out another $8,000 for a Kaleidoscape system. Sound familiar?
Yes, I'm afraid it does.
This is kind of the same. Yeah, this is also the same situation with AMX. It's also the same situation with Control 4. The irony of the situation is, if you wanted to, if you had an existing Crestron or Control 4 system in place that you didn't want to rip the wiring out of, we could take and connect to it. And if you managed to wrestle up the programmer who did the work in the first place, you could work with them to write a driver to take and talk between the two systems.
Mm-hmm. Can you interface with Lutron Lighting? That's another big lighting lighting company.
I'm familiar with Lutron. We had a Lutron driver in an earlier version of the software code. Unfortunately, it doesn't work anymore. I don't have a Lutron system here to test, or otherwise I'd take and get everything back up running again. But basically, if there's a protocol sheet and anything that we can talk to, we can make it work, and then we can write a driver very quickly. I can write a driver for a lighting interface in about 30 minutes, given a protocol sheet.
Now, are you familiar with CEDIA, the Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association, whose big convention is coming up later this month? Are you going to be there?
I want to be there. No, I tapped up my vacation budget just going through a couple of vacations earlier this month. I wanted to go. But, I've been to CEDIA before. Pluto was at CEDIA before, and parts of the system were shown off at CEDIA before. I don't know if you're aware, but at one point, Monster Cable, did license an earlier version of the Pluto Home software as the Monster Einstein system, and they did show it off at CEDIA back in 2006.
Yes, I remember that, and I didn't know that it was a licensed version of Pluto. That's very interesting. I'll have to ask the Monster guys about that.
It's the same system.
Wow, okay.
It's the same system. They didn't go through with it. Yeah, they didn't go through with it, but it's the same system. I believe that Monster is working with the original developer now on a smaller project as well. It's been at Cydia before, and Cydia is a really cool convention to go to. I love it. The last convention that we were at as a whole team actually was LinuxTOG back in 2008, which is actually where this Linux MCE shirt is from. So,
well, Thomas, it sounds like you're very enthusiastic, and I think we could talk for hours about all the different aspects of this application, because you're obviously your enthusiasm is clearly coming through. But I do want to cover, we're sort of running out of time, I just wanted to cover real quickly, what's the business model? What funds this software, and how did you get involved with it as an open source project, and how much of this is community supported as opposed to, you know, somebody working for the company or whatever producing code for that?
Currently, it's entirely community supported. There is no business model. What has happened was that Pluto had licensed the software to a couple of vendors. One of them works very actively with us. That's Convergent Home Technologies, and they're based out of Chelmsford in the UK. And they have their own commercial fork of the software. They have their changes, and then they fold their changes back into our code base. But as far as a business model, an active business model for this particular piece of software, it's entirely volunteer based. We are working entirely on this in our spare time, and just bit by bit, day by day, taking and adding things to it. I do smart home consulting from time to time for various houses, large and small. So that does pay. And I have my contracting gigs that I do in other capacities. So that's how I get funded. There is also a situation where we have a community store called lmcecompatible.com that sells Linux MCE compatible gear, and part of the proceeds from the sale of hardware of those gear, particularly the orbiter pads that are being sold on that site, go to fund a development pool that we can use to buy hardware and things to do additional work on. But it's very much a volunteer effort at this moment. There is no business model at present.
Well, I must say I'm quite impressed. I looked at the video in preparation for the show, and I was really amazed at the kind of things you can do. And, you know, I'm on the road most of the time, so having something really cool at my home really doesn't matter for investing for me. But it sounds to me like for the people for whom this is appropriate, this has got to be sort of best of niche. It really does look like a very superior set of stuff together. And now that you tell me it's a labor of love, I've even been more impressed. So I wish you a lot of luck in your project, and hopefully more people will find out about the project by listening to on this show. And we can go to linuxmce.org and get hooked up with you and get more details, right?
Of course. Yes, of course. And not only that, but we also have a Facebook group as well, Linux MCE. We have Facebook, etc. And we also have the IRC channel, which is /LinuxMCE and /LinuxMCE-devel in Freenode on irc.freenode.net as well. So we have lots of opportunities for developers and interested people. We need more than just developers, too. We need evangelists. We need people to help write documentation on our wiki. We need people to test things, et cetera, et cetera. You know, everything that a good growing open source project needs. I do admit that given the fact that we cross so many disciplines and so many boundaries, it is a bit more difficult to get involved in the project on the outset, because it does require a nicely bald set of skills in order to do that. But we do try to help anyone who is interested. We bend over backwards to always try to help any interested people to come into the fold.
Very good, very good. Well, Thomas, I really thank you for your time out of your day to talk to us today. So we'll say goodbye to you. And that's been Thomas Cherry Holmes. He's been working with the Linux MCE project since 2007. And obviously a very good spokesman for it. Don't you agree, Scott?
Absolutely. I agree with you entirely. The enthusiasm there is infectious.
I know. It's almost like it makes me want to stay home more so I can just play with this thing. like every project we talk about on Floss, I want to go do a little bit more with it as soon as I get off with this. You know, somebody asked me in the chat room the other day, they said, well, how many of those things do you actually go then back and do? And I go, you know, I'm so busy. I got so much stuff going on. This is one more project that I'm going to say, wow, it's really cool. But hopefully there'll be a lot of people. Hopefully there are a lot of people that will be able to listen to this and make use of it and engage it. So
I sure hope so. Absolutely.
See how it works. Yeah, very cool. So I appreciate your line of questioning. You're obviously a lot more a stay-at-home guy than I am, so I'm glad that there was somebody between the two of us, one of us knew what home theater stuff was about.
As my wife says, I watch TVs for a living. Not TV, but TVs.
Oh, that's
so I
great.
I do stay home a bit, yes.
Well, speaking of guests and guest hosts, and like, well, that's my stupid bad transition that I always do every time, which never really works very well. But we have a lot of good guests coming up in the future here. In fact, I just filled up my September and October dance card, so I'm really happy. We've got a whole bunch of new people lined up here. So bear with me as I try to remember what each of these projects is about. Next week, we've got Walter Bender on Sugar Labs. Sugar Labs is the software that's being used in the OLPC. It lets people cooperate, lets kids cooperate to produce homework assignments and things like that, and educational experiences. Really looking forward to that one. Patrick Ballou is coming in, talking to us about Webcam Studio, which allows us to create one virtual webcam that mixes a lot of video channels down, depending on what you have hooked up to your machine. We've got Karsten Dominic is here talking about Emacs Org Mode, which is like outline mode on steroids, even including spreadsheets and stuff in the middle of it. Emacs, of course, is crazy to begin with. Ross Boucher is going to talk to us about Cappuccino, which is a web development framework that acts a lot like OS X, but works in the web browser, which would be nice. Just added to the schedule, you might have saw this tweet yesterday, Alexander Leamy is coming on, talking about the Plone Content Management System, a legacy system, been around for a long time. A lot of people be using that on their websites for developing websites and web applications. Just a couple more. John Newton and Louis Salsa are coming on. Louis Sala. I got that wrong. Alfresco. Alfresco is also a content management system. So we've got them both back to back from two different aspects, though. We've got kind of old and new for that. And just recently added as well, Darren Schreiber, the 2600 Hertz project, which is a project that really covers telephony from end to end, not just little pieces in the middle. So again, lots of variety of people coming up. We've got a lot of other people on the short list. Go to twit.tv/floss to find the list that's there. And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. Where can we find you, Scott?
You can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. And, my primary websites are ultimateavmag.com for all your ultimate AV interest, and hometheatermag.com, where we cover more of the mainstream of the home theater marketplace with plenty of product reviews. So check out all of those sources for me, and also my podcast on the Twit Network, which is Home Theater Geeks, recording Mondays 1:30 to 2:30 p.m., except this coming Monday, which is Labor Day. So everybody have a great Labor Day, and join me the week after that when my guest will be Fred Mantagian, one of my very favorite home theater geeks, a very entertaining fellow, should be a wild conversation. So I hope you'll join me for that.
Sounds good. I'll definitely check that out. Also, if you're following me on Twitter, you'll know that tomorrow, as we're taping this on Wednesday, I will be joining Tom Merritt and the crew down at the Dragon Con. I'll be there. It's my ninth experience there, ninth time there. I go as a guest on the Electronic Frontier Foundation track, and so we'll be down there chatting with all the people. And I'm going to try to catch up with their live tweet events or Twit events. Let's just get the right name for the network I'm on. Yes, very important. I'll be catching up with them down there. That'll be great. And we also have follow me on Twitter. You'll be able to see when I'm hooking up. I've got also my Hacker 101, Hacker 201 panels. It'll be fun. It's my one indulgence conference of the year. I mean, you're hanging out with 30,000 people that are all geekier than I am, which is a little scary, actually, when you think about it. And I think I've covered just about everything I want to do. Any last words, Scott?
Thanks for having me on the show. It's been great.
Oh, Scott, well, thank you for coming on the show. I mean, like I said, you brought a level of expertise to the show that I could not have come anywhere close to. So I really appreciate you coming on, taking time out of your day, and especially since we moved it an hour early for the live taping. I appreciate you waking up just a little bit earlier. I really thank you.
It's a little earlier than I'm used to, but it's fine. Absolutely fine. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Scott. And we'll see all the rest of you next week on Floss Weekly.